And there came a day, unlike any other, when a group of like-minded individuals were united in deep discussion through a weekly movie podcast. On that day, that film stew was born, to bring you reviews and news about the latest and upcoming movies and TV shows. This is That Film Stew.
Hello and welcome to That Film Stew, and welcome to our sausage party.
Okay, so I'm assuming sausage party will mean something in a minute or two.
You're listening to That Movie Show with Luke.
And Jason.
We've got plenty of movie news and TV news, trailer talk, and we've got a new segment, Superhero Cast Quiz.
All right, but we'll explain what that's all about when we get to it.
We'll also be joined later by Gareth and Jay from Comic Zone with the latest in comic news. But without further delay, let's start with trailer talk. Captain America, Civil War.
Okay, now, as you all would probably know, I haven't watched this trailer. Yay, go me. However, the internet has spoiled for me the reveal of the new Spider-Man costume. When I say spoiled, okay, it wasn't really spoiled. I love it. I'm digging it. I'll let you speak now. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
No, we'll do just as you say. We'll just talk about the Spider-Man costume. Yep, it's got a... I mean, the design looks just like the original Steve Ditko design.
Yeah, we're getting black webs, which essentially is all I wanted. Another feature is the eyes.
I think the eyes are fantastic. The fact that even though Peter Parker, as Spider-Man, has the mask, he can now emote through his eyes.
Yeah, it looks like there's some sort of, I guess, like a camera lens. So obviously there's like a tech sort of thing to it. Stark tech, something like that involved.
Well, you're right. You do hear a camera shutter as the eyes are moving.
So at first I was like, is this magic? Is it a magical suit? What's going on? But there's a scientific reason behind it.
And the little spider logo has a little man in it.
Yeah.
It's a Spider-Man.
I don't really like it.
But the logo from afar, it looks like the logo we know and love.
I just don't want to zoom into it because it looks pretty shocking. But maybe it'll change. It might change it up a bit.
We know Spider-Man is a teenager in this movie, but he looks pretty manly in that costume.
Yeah.
He's, you know, physically, he's a full-bodied man.
Has Tom Holland
and then
up?
He has a little boy voice. What do you think to that? I mean, I love that we're now getting a teenage Spider-Man.
It sounds like Spider-Man. The line that he says, hey, everybody, it sounds like something Spider-Man. He rocks up. There's these established adult superheroes doing their thing, getting it all, you know, getting it on. And he's just like, you know, like a kid, like, hey, everyone, look at me. Like, hi, like I'm here. It looks good.
So we're both sold on the Spidey design. Now for the peculiar Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
I just want to describe this as, imagine Tim Burton in all these like wonderful visionary ways. Imagine Tim Burton making an X-Men movie.
Nailed it. That is exactly what this movie looks
That's
like.
That's what this is. It looks creepy as all hell.
In I some think ways, this just looks great.
It looks magical. It looks like what Tim Burton does best. Weird, fantastical things. You know, it says it in the trailer, visionary director Tim Burton, and that's pretty much sums it up. That's what you get.
Change of pace. Sausage party. Wow. I mean, this movie, so this is a US R-rated animated movie. It pretty much starts like a Pixar film.
It looks like a Pixar movie. Think Toy Story, but like, okay, we're looking at food now. You know, we got, how do you describe them? Humanoid food? Is that the best way to say it?
It's food with arms and legs.
They got eyes, mouths, I'm assuming emotions and personalities.
For me, this trailer is Pixar until the potato peeler. And that's where it becomes something else. Baby carrots. Oh, my word. Those poor carrots.
Yeah, bottom line, looks hilarious. I'm loving the bad language that's in it. And yeah, it oozes, you know, the Seth Rogen and all that kind of crew. All of that kind of stuff, you know.
I'd heard about this movie for a while, but nothing prepared me for that trailer.
It's not what I was expecting. I don't know what I was thinking, but yeah, I wasn't expecting. It looks so pretty, like a Pixar movie. And I wasn't prepared for that.
I recently watched Seth Rogen in the movie The Night Before. Didn't really do anything for me. And I'm thinking, I've always liked Seth Rogen, But am I coming to the end of liking Seth Rogen?
No, this is not the end.
And Sausage Party and what I've heard and seen of the Preacher TV series, he's pulling me back in.
Now, I've always been a fan, so it is unfortunate to hear about that Christmas movie, but I don't know, I haven't checked it out yet, so he hasn't burnt me as of this time.
Time for movie news. Do you want to start us off?
Okay, so looking at Star Wars, the Han Solo prequel spin-off, A Star Wars Story? I don't know, whatever.
That is what it's called, isn't it? Yeah, a Star Wars Story.
Well, there'd be something like that, yeah. A Star Wars Han Solo. It doesn't matter, man.
What's the news?
So, Disney's obviously doing a search for, a young man to play the young Han Solo. We've got a sort of a narrowed short list for actors, doing screen tests and stuff like that. A few names: Alden Ehrenreich from Hail Caesar, Jack Raynor from Transformers Age of Extinction, and Taron Egerton from The Kingsman and Eddie the Eagle. Egerton's the only name that pretty much I know of on there.
He's the only one that jumps out at me.
Yeah, so there's probably going to be a few other names like on the list. But yeah, there seems to be a lot of secrecy to all these upcoming Star Wars projects. But I guess the other news, which is probably expected, Chewbacca's going to be in the movie. So it's going to be a story about Han and Chewie.
Well, it's said to be an origin story about Han and little Chewie.
That makes sense.
Or little young Chewie.
There are little Wookiees, aren't there? Like young Wookiees?
Yeah,
Are they small?
I think so.
Oh my god, they might look like Ewoks.
Did we not see little Wookiees in Revenge of the Sith?
I'm trying to think, but I don't think we did.
Well, this is interesting.
Wow, we are bad Star Wars fans.
Okay, Indiana Jones 5, officially set for 2019. Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg are returning. Does that have you excited?
Much of the same. Like, yeah, keep going, whatever. All good, but...
Okay, no. There's more. George Lucas is not mentioned anywhere in the studio's press release, meaning that until further notice, this will be the first Indiana Jones movie that is based on a screen story that Lucas played no role in developing.
Okay, take my money. Nah, just kidding.
Also, the guy that wrote The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull will be writing the movie.
That's David Collip, yeah?
That's him.
I've heard his name before, and I think he's done a few things that I like. I think he might have been involved in the Spider-Man movie or two. Not too sure. Can't confirm that.
Okay.
Don't want me to do it.
Note to self. More research next time.
But this sounds all like some good stuff. Okay, we'll jump over to Justice League, where Amber Heard has officially confirmed she will be playing Mera, the Queen of Atlantis, in the upcoming DC films Justice League Part 1. And, of course, Aquaman. Now, we've obviously spoken about this before, and I suppose it wasn't confirmed. We had rumours at the time or negotiations.
Well, this has been happening a lot lately, where somebody is talked about being up for a role, and then weeks become months, and then it's confirmed. So I feel as though I've known for a long time.
Yeah, and then when it officially comes, you're just like, yep, cool.
But now it's official, so that's good news. I think she'll be great in the role.
Now, what Heard has actually said about the costume in particular for Mera, she says... This is my best Amber Heard impression.
I didn't know you had one.
No, it's just going to sound exactly like me. It's interesting. It's like half suit of armor, half scales. It's strange. We're in the process of building it now, so it's coming along. Yeah, also, Jason Momoa is going blonde for his Aquaman role.
That is literally the most exciting part of the story for me. As excited as I am for Amber Heard, a blonde Aquaman. Come on, who doesn't want a blonde Aquaman?
I mean, that's cool because it does match like what I know of him as the comics sort of thing. But didn't we already get an image of him as Aquaman?
We know how he's going to look in Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Just want to throw out there, so I am super excited for this movie.
So his character...
We're so close.
We're days away.
Anyway, back on point. But yeah, he's got brown hair in Dawn of Justice.
So his character will actually dye his hair.
Will evolve and have depth. Pun intended.
He'll evolve, get like extra scales and his fin will get bigger.
He's not going to mutate, he's just going to evolve. He's going to, broaden his horizons, a bit of hair dye.
Maybe he'll just wash his hair and it's actually that dirty that it's blonde underneath.
Whatever it takes for you to buy a blonde Aquaman. Let's go with that. Lobo news. Now, this is not a mainstream character, but a DC Comics character. Warner Brothers has hired Wonder Woman writer Jason Fuchs. That sounds rude. Might not be pronouncing that right. To work on the script for their Lobo movie. Back in 2012, San Andreas director Brad Peyton signed on to direct, but there had been no news since then. So do you think the success of Deadpool is responsible for the revival of this movie? I mean, he's an R-rated character. He's an alien bounty hunter, as powerful as Superman.
Like, it's all possible. I mean, like, we've been talking about, I guess, what we call the Deadpool effect, and whether or not it is a thing is yet to, you know, to be confirmed, I guess, but...
If you're going to apply, you know, to the right characters, I think this is one of those cases.
Characters
like
who
Lobo,
need it.
It would work as an R-rated movie. And Danny Trejo, recently, he was, like, petitioning online for the role, and he even had a piece of fan-made art made up of him as the character.
All right, so good news for Batman the Killing Joke. Now, that's an upcoming animated DC film, obviously. Now, it's been confirmed that Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy will reunite to voice, obviously, Batman and the Joker.
Perfect. Love it.
Yep. Tara Strong will voice Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, and Ray Weiss will voice Commissioner Gordon. Yeah, Mark Hamill's shared the very first image of the new movie on Twitter. And
take our word for it. If you've not seen it, it's great.
It looks
unfortunately,
like,
we can't show it to you right now.
Use your imagination or go look it up. It's probably on our Facebook page. Plug. Yeah, so you're probably familiar with them voicing the characters back in the 1990s, but it's good to, you know, yeah, it's definitely exciting to hear that both Conroy and Hamill are back, and they're just as excited as we probably are.
Yeah, I'm completely on board. Like, when there was first mention of the Killing Joke being adapted, and there's talks again, you know, we're talking of R-rated comic book properties. This is another one, this time animated. But you're right, they're just as excited as we are. Now, I've got some Spider-Man news, and it's very, very brief. And it's not really news.
No,
well, I guess
this
it's
is
news.
Breaking stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Beep, 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 beep. This just in, Ice Cube is not up for J. Jonah Jameson in Spider-Man.
Okay.
Are you okay with that, Jason?
I'm fine with that. That's fine.
But just so you know, if not J. Jonah Jameson, a character Cube would like to play, the Incredible Hulk.
Well, it's not going to happen, Ice Cube, is it? No. Unless they reboot the Hulk again, then it might happen. Move on.
That's all I got on Spider-Man. Next story.
That could potentially be the worst Spider-Man news. Not because it's bad news, it's just stupid news.
There was the faintest rumour. Hey.
It was.
There was the faintest rumour that it was going to be, you know, in talks for the role.
Let's talk about Ghostbusters. I know you always like doing that.
I do, actually.
There's a Ghostbusters animated feature coming. I didn't even know about this. Maybe I did. Maybe
we've talked about it on a previous podcast.
I forget things. Lots of drugs.
It's not really been confirmed what it's going to be, if it's the original four, if it's going to tie into the actual movie.
Or the new movie, you mean?
Yep, new movie. But yeah, a new animated movie is coming.
Well, we've got a director signed on, Fletcher Mules. He's done work on Clash of Clans. Clans is a popular online game, but some of its spots are even more popular. One of Fletcher's spots, Ride of the Hog Riders, had been viewed 89 million times, so potentially that many people know who he is.
I don't know that game, but as you know, and as the listeners know, I do like Ghostbusters.
You do?
So anything Ghostbusters has me excited.
Well, good news is that Ivan Reitman, our co-creator of Ghostbusters, as I'm sure you would know, he's on to act as one of the producers, so at least... Yeah, there's some sort of control stopping it from getting out of hand or anything.
Works for me.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice 2 news. Now, it was a bit of a roller coaster because it was confirmed that Beetlejuice 2 was happening, but the news that I'm going to bring to you today, Tim Burton says Beetlejuice 2 is not in development.
I'm over this, I think.
It was like, I think for a day, we were in hope that once again this movie was happening, and then it was just... ripped away from us.
Yeah, like I said, I'm over it. I'm sick of hearing Winona Ryder and, you know, Michael Keaton being like, I'm on board if everyone else is, and yeah, let's do it, let's get it done, and then nothing's happening, and then, you know, in a month's time we're going to hear them talking about it again, and I'm done. If it happens, I don't care.
I'm with you. I'm over it until it happens, then I'm back on board.
Until I see something, you know, production's actually gone into, even then it could be cancelled, couldn't it? Stuff could happen. Yeah, I don't know.
Living hope. Just think, for years they were talking about a new Ghostbusters movie, and hey, that's happening.
I suppose, yeah.
Probably not the best example.
Speaking of movie sequels that we may or may not want.
Or need.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger says that he's prepping for another round in the Terminator world. In an interview on Australian TV, how's that? Arnie responded to questions about the possibility of a sixth entry, with this to say, I am looking forward to it absolutely.
What I think's potentially happened here, nobody's actually told Arnie that Genesis isn't getting a sequel. That's what I think's happened.
Oh, well, that's so sad, isn't it?
I think Arnie needs to open and read his emails.
Oh. Emails?
But a character that is looking to come back, Tomb Raider. Daisy Ridley has confirmed that she has been in talks to star as Lara Croft in the reboot.
Sure. Like, fine. No good, days.
I've only seen, to my knowledge, Daisy Ridley in The Force Awakens.
Oh, you watched that, did you?
Lara Croft? Yeah, I can see that.
It works. Do you know, I do have a name that I want to throw in there for it now.
Instead of Daisy Ridley.
Well, no, nothing against Daisy Ridley, but if they're going to go with someone. There's an actress from Grey's Anatomy, of all places. Hear me out. This actress has actually, her name's Camilla Luddington. She's actually the motion capture and the voice actress for the, I think, the latest Tomb Raider game that was on, like, PS3. That generation. So, yeah.
I've got no idea what you're talking about. Somebody out there might know, but I've got no idea.
She looks apart, and I reckon she can do it.
I'm team Daisy Ridley all the way.
She's got those triangle boobs, and works well.
Triangle boobs?
Oh, that's just a Tomb Raider joke, man.
Okay.
Come on, from back in the...
I don't remember that from Force Awakens.
Have you seen Wally?
Yeah, in high school.
What?
You're talking about the book, Where's Wally?
Yeah, have you seen him?
Yeah, in high school. From high school.
Where's he been? Where's Wally? Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. My God, they're producing a Where's Wally film.
Sorry, what was I saying about Seth Rogen before?
This is fine, man. This is good news, I reckon. It sounds good. Obviously, if you're listening in the States and maybe some other territories that we don't know what it's called there.
Waldo.
Yeah, it's better where's known Waldo? As Waldo. Yeah. Or where's Waldo? But here in Australia and I guess in the UK, it is Where's Wally. The object of the book, if you don't know, is to find Wally. They're making a movie.
I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, they're obviously going to go look for Wally. No, do you know? Have you ever seen? There was an animated show, Where's Wally?
Right, yes.
It had Wally, had his dog.
I enjoyed that show, actually.
Had the wizard, Oddlaw, which is Waldo backwards, by the way. So Waldo is, I reckon, his real name. Yeah, he was in it. They went on, like, they used, like, the his Wally had a magical walking stick. They went to different worlds and stuff.
So you think it's going to be more an adaptation of the TV show?
I think if they did that, that would transfer well. Otherwise, it would be some weird comedy about these bunch of dudes looking for their mate, Wally.
Imagine Taken, but with Wally.
I was thinking more like... That's what it could be. I was thinking more like The Hangover with Wally.
I mean, that works better.
But Taken, sure.
Less threatening.
Sex ring. Well, yeah.
So that's it for movie news. And what I have for you, Jason, is a new segment, Superhero Cast Quiz. Now, what you have to do is identify the non-superhero film from its cast of heroes.
I pretty much do this in reverse every time a movie comes out now, just because there's so many actors who have been heroes and comic book characters. So
you sounded pretty confident.
Yeah, I can do it.
Batman, Gwen Stacy, The Hulk.
Oh, this is an easy one. Birdman.
Correct.
Yep.
I wish I had a bell.
Ding, ding, ding.
Batman, Wolverine, Black Widow, Maya Henson, Alfred Pennyworth.
Okay, so I'm thinking Batman. I'm thinking maybe Christian Bale. Obviously, Hugh Jackman. Nah, I'm going to pass on this one.
The Prestige.
Oh, I wouldn't have gotten that one. Come on.
Final one.
All right.
Batman, Hawkeye, Mystique, Rocket Raccoon, Lois Lane.
Oh, I do know this one. Lois Lane is obviously Amy Adams. Is it Amy Adams? Yeah. Bradley Cooper. Oh, what was that movie called? I know it. American Hustle.
You got it.
Yes. I was stuck on the name. I knew the...
2 out of 3.
Okay. I'm happy with that.
Always my concern with a new segment is that you're not going to get it and then the segment falls flat. I'm satisfied. Two out of three.
Not too easy. Just about right.
TV news. Lethal Weapon. We talked previously. Damon Wayans Sr. Roger Murtaugh. I'd been waiting to see who was going to play Martin Riggs.
Oh, you get me all excited.
And now it's happened.
Who is it?
And I read the name and I'm like, I don't know him. It's Clayne Crawford.
No idea.
From TV series Rectify.
I don't even know what that is.
Neither do I. But Crawford is set to headline alongside Damon Wayne Sr. So there we are. Riggs and Murtaugh cast.
Well, I guess the only question is, okay, you're not familiar with Crawford. Does he look like a good Riggs?
I don't even know. A good Riggs looks like Mel Gibson. So no, he doesn't.
Oh, sorry, Crawford.
But at the same time, Wayne Sr. doesn't like Danny Glover. I don't know. When Damon Wayne Sr., I mentioned on this podcast, was cast, I was excited. This, I don't know. I'll just wait and see. With the movies, it's the relationship between Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. It's that chemistry that makes that franchise.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things like that that's the problem people have with, you know, reboots and stuff. It's not that, you know, you're retelling a new, like, the same stories in a different way or something. It's you love the first property of it because of characters that were played by certain actors, because it worked.
I'm such a big fan of Lethal Weapon. You just forgive the fact that the point of the movie or the series is that Mel Gibson is a lethal weapon. When you get to parts 2, 3, and then 4 especially, he's no longer that lethal weapon. He's been domesticated.
Yeah.
But you just forgive it. You got Joe Pesci.
That's
awesome.
Right. Okay, so from Lethal Weapon to MacGyver, we're talking the CBS reboot. Casting news on MacGyver, Lucas Till. He's our man. I'm probably known from as a Havoc in the X-Men franchise. Sure.
Again, I think the last time we spoke about MacGyver, because it was newsworthy, I threw it in there. I've done it again.
You've done it.
I felt as though we had to come full circle. We talked about a TV series being in development.
This will probably be the last bit of news then on MacGyver until forever, unless it gets cancelled.
Now, this is some news that I thought, it's a bit odd, but could be okay. I don't know. Pennyworth. That name might sound familiar.
As in Alfred?
Exactly right. Batman's Alfred Pennyworth could be getting his own TV series. DC Entertainment has registered a trademark in the name of Pennyworth. Could it be a spin-off of Gotham? We've seen Sean Pertwee. I think he's a great Alfred, to be honest. Or could it be related to Batman v Superman? Or it could just be a direct-to-DVD animated movie. It could be webisodes. It could be anything. But what we do know, something Pennyworth related is coming.
Or maybe not. It is possible that I was thinking about, I was like, perhaps DC Entertainment has literally taken out or registered the trademark of Pennyworth just so nobody else can make something called Pennyworth.
Potentially, but do you know what I've just realised? This is the first time I've, like, start to finish just speculated throughout this story.
Just, like, I don't know anything.
I'm trying to give news, but I'm just speculating along the way.
Well, the news is that, you know, the trademark's been registered.
Oh, I got the news in there. It was just...
You've done well, mate.
Just smothered by my speculation. But yeah.
Let me speculate on The Flash. One of your faves.
Oh.
And one of your favourite people as well, Kevin Smith.
Oh, one of my favourite
people.
So he
was, recently on the set of The Flash. I think he's directing an episode or two or writing something.
Yeah, he's directing an episode. I think it's happening. He's either just wrapped or he's still doing it now. Yeah.
So I think you want us to speculate that perhaps Jay and Silent Bob, the characters, will make a cameo.
It's something that Smith is known for. I mean, cast your mind back to Scream 3. We got to see Jay and Silent Bob in the movie. I think this rumour has come from the fact that, I mean, Jason Mewes and Kevin Smith, both really big fans of The Flash. Jay has been on set. So you've essentially got Silent Bob on set, Jay on set.
They're there.
People have connected the dots.
Well,
I don't necessarily need this to happen. Like, I'm a big fan of Jay and Silent Bob. I'm a big fan of The Flash. I don't necessarily need to see two worlds collide.
It would have to be the smallest, most irrelevant sort of cameo that would, maybe just in the background, or just pop up for like less than 5 seconds.
I think Smith is that big of a fan of The Flash that he wouldn't do it.
Just because
he'd like to keep it separate.
Yeah, he wouldn't want to be like, let me just rub my stuff on it. That came out wrong.
No, I think that's how you meant it.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have some renewal news. Supergirl has been renewed for season 2, Gotham season 3, and Legends of Tomorrow season 2. I had to think for a minute there.
You know, I'm genuinely happy and glad that these shows are getting renewed. You know, like if you were to say Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was getting renewed for like season 5 or whatever, or 4, I'd, you know, like, sure, I'll watch it, but I have to watch it. That's how I feel about it.
And because the CW likes to bring all their shows back, Arrow is also coming back.
Oh, cool.
So
okay,
all
that makes
the
sense.
DC shows are continuing.
But yeah, obviously Gotham, big fan, and Supergirl. Yeah, I get to watch Melissa Benoist as Supergirl for another season.
Well, all right then.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Legends of Tomorrow. A beloved superhero will appear in the finale, which will set up, which you've mentioned, season 2.
Booster Gold.
Is that your pick?
That's my pick. That's my hope. The story, or the series, it already focuses on time travel. Why not have a time-traveling superhero, Booster Gold, enter the series?
Okay.
He'd be my pick.
I don't have a pick, sorry.
Okay. Marvel, Sweet Christmas. I tried to deliver it. I cannot. I'm not capable of delivering that line. But what I can tell you, Marvel's Luke Cage is coming to Netflix this September. We're currently in the midst of Daredevil season 2. I'm thoroughly enjoying. I know you're one episode in, Jason, so we won't get into that. But just more from Netflix. Yeah, bring it on. And the idea that here we are in March watching Daredevil, September, Luke Cage. Great news.
Oh, and everything in between. Like,
If you get to the end of season 2 of Daredevil, again, I'm not quite there yet, but the first Luke Cage teaser trailer is available.
Now, I have watched this, and if it is the same teaser, it's nothing too revealing or spoiler filled.
Oh, it's not a spoiler teaser.
It's just a very short scene with the character, and yeah.
It's a great thing that Marvel does. It rewards the fans. Like, it gives you something, you consume it, and then you get a little extra on top. Whether it's a tag at the end of the movies, it's a teaser at the end of the TV series. There is talks as well, and this is just because Jeremy Renner was asked the question of a Hawkeye Netflix series. Personally, I think this would be a perfect fit for the character. Because how long can he really just stand toe-to-toe with giants in the movies? Mm. I mean, they've already got their human in Black Widow.
Yeah,
which is not exactly the everyman, but neither is Hawkeye. When you're going to get to Avengers Infinity War, are you really going to have Hawkeye go to space?
He'll suffocate.
Age of Ultron, you got to see more of Hawkeye. You found out that he's got a wife and kids. I think a Netflix show would be a perfect fit for that character. Because even though they expanded his role in Age of Ultron, I just don't think that character is working on screen.
I don't think they'd expand it further sort of thing. I think that was their opportunity to do it. Well, so you think if they were to do a Netflix series, it would be, I guess, him going forward? It wouldn't be a prequel or anything?
No, it'd be him going forward. Yeah. And like Daredevil, it'd be more street level.
Yeah, true.
When we're first introduced to him, you know, he had a cameo in Thor and he was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. So maybe more of that approach. But the Netflix model.
Yes, which we all like. No, hopefully you've all heard of The Tick. Well, he's going to be returning to the small screen. Now, Warburton, who headlined the 9-episode live-action The Tick, unfortunately won't be reprising the title role, but he is attached as executive producer. So, you know, hopefully something good's going to come of that. The Tick has already cast its Arthur. Griffin Newman from Vinyl will play accountant-turned-moth-themed superhero Arthur Everest, while Valerie Curry from House of Lies will play his sister Dot. Now, in 1994, the first Tick series came to TV as an animated half-hour show, which ran for 2 seasons and 36 episodes. But are you excited?
Well, that was my introduction to the character, that TV series. I remember it, you know, so I was a kid, and it came on at 7 p.m. That was late. When you're a kid, 7 p.m. is late.
I was asleep. I was a 4-year-old.
Okay. And again, notable age difference. But yeah, I loved The Tick. It was, you know, it was a really cool show. I've not read many Tick comics. I did miss the live action Patrick Warburton show. But if it's going to come back around again, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, cool.
More in my wheelhouse than yours, I'd say. Doctor Who news. A new Doctor Who companion has been cast and will be along any minute, reveals Peter Capaldi. He's a doctor, in case you're...
Yeah, I know. Sure. Come on, I know.
Capaldi says he now knows who his next TARDIS companion will be and that they represent an exciting and very different sort of take on it. So I'm curious, when they say a different take, is it actually going to be a different take? Is it going to be the doctor and an old man?
Yeah, or like...
two old men travelling through time and space. That would be different.
Yeah, turn into like an old man buddy comedy. That'd be right. I'll check it out.
There you go.
I'd have to go all the way back, I reckon, to watch them all.
How far do you think you'd have to go back in Doctor Who to watch it all?
When they did There's like a modern series, yeah?
Yeah, so Christopher Eccleston.
I would start there.
That's not far.
Like, not really. That's, no. What's that, 11 seasons?
Not even that.
Oh, 9?
We're doing this thing again where we're speculating.
I don't know things.
But just go back as far as Eccleston and take it from there. Or even, if I'm honest, like I did watch Eccleston and Tennant on and off, but it was Matt Smith that got me into The Doctor. Yeah. So if you're going to do the same as what I did, just start at series 5.
Okay.
But anyway, back to the news.
Sure.
I almost forgot we were recording then.
That's the magic of podcasting. That's how it should be. All right, we've mentioned Warburton before with the Tick. I guess a reason why Patrick Warburton isn't playing that character is because he's going to be busy providing the voice of Lemony Snicket for the new series of Unfortunate Events. Now, back in 2004, we had Jude Law voicing Lemony Snicket for the film adaptation. But yeah, here we have the small screen Netflix version. And we're going to have that lovely Warburton voice.
Oh, well, this time he's going to play the man on camera. I think it's going to be a first.
Oh, wow.
For Lemony Snicket to actually be on screen.
The character will be throughout the movie, or will it just be sort of like an opening?
I'm picturing him just sat in an armchair and introducing it that way. Kind of like Tales from the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah. That's what I wanted with the Goosebumps movie, you know, with the Arnold Stein just starting. But they went a different way. That works.
But we've talked about this story previously, and you're fairly excited about this series.
Oh, I like the movie, and now I'm all for the series, and Netflix shows seem to go pretty well. And I like Warburton. He has a good voice.
Okay, cool. Now, this is a new segment. Now, we do ask when we sign off at the end of each podcast, if you do have any segment ideas, please write in, and we will give the segments a shot on the podcast. We're doing that right now. This is the idea of Nathan Connolly from Perth, Western Australia.
Where's that?
That is in Australia. And the idea is, well, the name I've come up with for the segment is Say What You See. So it's one reference in either a movie or TV connecting to something else. Here goes. Sylvester Stallone left Beverly Hills Cop weeks before shooting. Did you know this? That originally Sylvester Stallone was going to be Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop?
Oh, no, I never heard that before, so that's...
Then I shall continue.
No, keep going.
Stallone's script rewrites made the budget skyrocket, and Paramount did not want to spend all the extra money, which I guess is understandable. Okay. A majority of Stallone's script went into his 1986 movie Cobra, and as a nod to Stallone's involvement, Judge Reinhold's character Billy Rosewood has posters of both Cobra and Rambo in his room in Beverly Hills Cop 2. Reference.
Boom. And so, obscure.
So hopefully, Nathan, that is what you meant when you wrote into us.
If not,
feel free to let us know and we can rectify it next time.
Just don't abuse us too much.
That was Say What You See. And now it's time for some comic news. I'm joined once again by Gareth.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello.
Recording almost live in Comic Zone. So C2E2
yes.
has just happened or is happening.
Yeah, happening right now in Chicago over in the US. Marvel have got a really strong presence this year. DC haven't really shown up. I think DC are saving all of their big announcements for next weekend at the WonderCon in LA. I know they're live streaming that in their website as well. That'll basically have all the announcements for the Rebirth number ones and the new creative teams and all that kind of thing. But Marvel's announcements have focused almost entirely on the Civil War 2 upcoming crossover event, which is going to obviously tie in quite heavily with the promotion for the Civil War film as well. No surprises there. Civil War 2 Spider-Man will have a creative team of Christos Gage, who was one of the writers on the Thor Dark World film. Big get for the art on this. Travel Foreman. I'm a huge fan. I've really wondered why he hasn't been doing more work recently. This obviously explains why. He was probably waiting for his exclusivity deal to finish up with DC. And now, yeah, he's in the, under the Marvel banner. I'm very excited.
It's been a while since I've seen him. I think Animal Man was the last time.
Pretty much, yeah. He worked on a few issues of the Justice League United book that Jeff Lemire was working for DC as well. And now that Jeff Lemire's under an exclusive contract for Marvel, I wonder if he's, you know, maybe put the word out there, said, you know, come work with me. We've got some good ideas coming up.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I don't think he was the best fit for the Justice League, though.
It just didn't really work, did it? It just he suits more of that kind of weird alt universe kind of thing. Like Animal Man was the perfect choice for him, just to be able to do something completely different and completely weird and really just push the boundaries of a character. And I'm kind of hoping he'll get a similar chance with Spider-Man for the Civil War books.
With all these Civil War titles, are you guys excited?
I've got to be honest, not overly. The main Civil War title I'm quite excited for. I think there's a lot of potential for story there. But I do feel that with anything like this, like Secret Wars 2 back in the, you know, what was it, the late 80s when they did that, that had the similar feel of just being a little bit of a cash-in.
Yeah, it was actually directly ahead. The summer after the first Secret Wars, Secret Wars 1 was a really big event for them. And they were like, hey, it worked. Let's do a sequel straight away. You know, the first one just being to launch action figures, and the second one like, well, that worked. This will be our yearly thing from now on.
Yeah, they were kind of relying on it being at the same level without necessarily putting the same level of thought and care into the story. Civil War 2 seems like it's got a cool hook for the story, at least in itself, not just being a promo thing to follow on from the Civil War film. So I'm kind of confident, and I'm quite happy with the creative teams being involved. Brian Bendis, Jimmy Chung, those kind of people, they're big names. They're proven commodities in the comic world. Dan Abnett doing the Gods of War tie-in, which he's describing as Hercules leading a team of gods in an Expendables-type suicide mission.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. Emilio Lasso doing the art on that one as well, who's worked for Zenoscope, doing a lot of Grim Fairy Tales and Aspen comics as well. So it's like kind of his big step into mainstream comics, which is, yeah, I'm pretty interested to see where it's going to go. One of the really interesting ones for me is the Civil War X-Men tie-in book, which is basically going to be the X-Men going up against the Inhumans.
Yeah, definitely an interesting thing happening, especially, you know, everyone knows Marvel have their whole thing. Fox have X-Men, so because they won't share their toys.
For the film rights, you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Marvel have pushed forward with the Inhumans for all the TV and media stuff, live action, and this is like almost the comic book equivalent of like, hey, your thing's going down, our new thing's better.
That's it. It's almost like a comic book version of running into your ex-wife.
Yeah, exactly.
In the street with your new partner in tow, and it's like, oh, this is really awkward. Oh, no, this is going to get really even more awkward because we're going to have an actual comic about the whole battle going on. Cullen Bunn's going to be writing that one, who most people know recently from the Magneto ongoing series at Marvel. He was also responsible for the Deadpool miniseries, Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, Deadpool Kills Deadpool, Return of the Living Deadpool, all those kind of things. So I'm very keen to see what he's going to do.
So he's responsible for some of all the Deadpool.
Pretty much.
I'm glad that X-Men are coming back.
Yes, definitely.
They're finally coming back. I mean, the Terrigen Mist that unlocks the Inhumans' powers, it didn't sterilize most mutants.
That's what's going on at the moment now with the Extraordinary X-Men story. That's kind of dealing with the fallout of this whole thing. As the Inhumans become a stronger, more powerful force in our world, the X-Men are actually getting kind of kicked to the curb and basically being treated like pariahs and lepers and that kind of thing because they're being poisoned by the Terrigen Mists.
And I like that. It's not something they're just dumping for Civil War 2. It's something they've already built.
That's it. They're tying in something that's already occurring in the universe that's already having consequences, and they're tying those consequences into this new event book, which I think is a smart move. If, like you say, if you just shoehorn this in as something happening because of Civil War, it would feel like too much happening already.
Absolutely.
Also announced at the C2E2 convention, we are confirmed to be getting Rogue One tie-in comics that will be prequels to the film before the film has actually hit the cinemas as well. Ooh. Which is really, really interesting.
Well, the first one, they announced Poe Dameron. That was the first Force Awakens tie-in, wasn't it?
Yes, that's going to be happening, I believe, the first issue coming out in May for the Poe Dameron miniseries or maxi-series, whatever it ends up being. But Rogue One is directly going to be tying into the Rogue One film. No creative teams released as yet, but this is the first kind of instance where the comic will hit before the film, and potentially, you know, you might have to tiptoe around a few spoilers that go in with that. But yeah, I'm very excited. I think it's a very smart move by Marvel to... Rogue One's a lot more risky of a proposition because there's no... You don't have a Han Solo, you don't have Leia, you don't have Luke Skywalker. You don't necessarily have Vader even or anything like that. So it is a bit more risky of a proposition despite being in the Star Wars universe. So anything you could do to keep people up and excited and interested, I think is a smart move.
You know, until Marvel, I'd never read a Star Wars comic.
Same big DC fans in particular who'd never gone to any kind of Marvel comic or anything like that. They jumped on because of the Star Wars comics. They've discovered some writers that they're quite fond of. They've followed their careers to other Marvel titles, and they've really broadened their horizon. So it's definitely been a big win for Marvel in that regard.
Yeah, I think the books have been great. Kanan, the young Padawan.
Yep.
Not so much. But the other titles, I think, have been great.
Yeah, a lot of people have still really enjoyed the Kanan Last Padawan stuff just because of it tying so heavily into the Star Wars Rebels TV show. I know you were in particular quite a fan of that, weren't you, Joe?
Yeah, I do quite enjoy it. I watch the cartoon religiously. It's nice to have something that ties directly into it and that kids can jump into.
I think that's a smart move in particular, is making sure that you've got something that's going to appeal to all age groups and all reading levels as well. You can get people just generally excited about Star Wars. And that way, everyone's got a jumping in point. You can say the kids jump in with this one. You can say the adults. If you like this as well, it's like you can almost do a family reading type thing with it as well. Like father and son, mother and daughter. It doesn't matter. Like, I think that's a really, really smart move.
Yeah, and that was a very noticeable thing with The Force Awakens. There was that quick miniseries they did that came out just before the film, but not that many people were cotton onto it at the time. It was announced quite late, I remember.
They announced it kind of late and it was rushed out a little bit just because they didn't want to shoehorn any spoilers out into the universe because everyone was so deathly terrified of having Force Awakens spoiled for themselves. It was like, should I read this or should I just avoid it like the plague until I've seen the movie? So always a fun tightrope to walk with any kind of spoiler alerts. We're all in that boat right now with Daredevil, of course, but, you know, that is what it is. It's the price we pay to be comic book fans.
Yeah, definitely.
Should we throw in some reviews, though?
Yeah, let's do it.
Excellent. International Iron Man number one was released this week, spinning out of the Invincible Iron Man series, which Brian Michael Bendis has been writing. He's writing this one as well, and Alex Maleev has joined him for the art duties, which I think was a big grab for a lot of people. He's not really been involved with the ongoing art side of things for a while. So I think, yeah, getting Alex Maleev on the art duties was a really smart move on their part. He's definitely going to draw a lot of people in.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that classic Daredevil team back together again, especially on the Iron Man book.
Absolutely, yeah. And Iron Man's a pretty safe bet in general, let alone when you've got a Civil War film teaming him up with a bunch of other classic Marvel heroes up against Captain America. You've already got that whole lines being drawn, battle lines kind of coming up. So you want to support any new book featuring that character as much as possible.
And I'm surprised it's taken as long as it has just to have two Iron Man books. It looks great. I didn't expect young Tony Stark. What do you guys think to that?
Yeah, that did feel a little bit out of place, considering that, I mean, I like this book's going to focus more on him trying to find out his true parentage, because in recent, Kieran Gillen's recent Iron Man run, we found that Tony Stark was actually adopted by Howard Stark and Martha Stark. They were not actually his birth parents, which was a controversial move. I know a lot of people weren't thrilled with it, and Kieran Gillen himself wasn't exactly thrilled with the way it panned out in the story. But yeah, this is what this book is going to follow on, is him trying to find out his true parentage, which, like Luke just said, if you're opening with your promo for this book as being finding his true parentage, flashing back to when he's young seems kind of weird straight away, and to spend most of the issue focusing on him as a young boy just seemed like an odd choice.
And I'm not a fan of him being adopted. I've got nothing against adoption, don't get me wrong, but I don't know, like, that story point didn't work for me.
Well, it's the kind of thing, like, with Iron Man's character, it's been so heavily and intrinsically linked to his history, like having the issues with his father, his own alcoholism and stuff like that. That was something his father battled, and the demons his father battled in that kind of way. So it's something that suddenly is now, I mean, fair enough, if you want to tell a different story, I'm all for that. But to literally just yank 60 years of history from a character out from under people, you're gonna have some sore people out there. People are not going to respond favorably to that necessarily.
Yeah, and it never really felt organic to the character. He doesn't need that extra level of drama in his life or trauma that he suffered in his youth. It was already well established why he was the way he was.
That's it. He's always felt like a fish out of water because he's such an intelligent, forward-thinking character. to suddenly make him feel like a fish out of water even more by being adopted and having that throw him for a loop, it's like, yeah, are you just trying to shoehorn in too many character elements?
And if you're not reading Iron Man, the main book, and haven't read the Kieran Gillen run, I found for this issue specifically, that reason for all the flashback doesn't happen till the last page of the issue.
This book does automatically get a 5 out of 5 review from me, though, because it features a massive West Ham reference in there. So I'm not exactly unbiased in this one. I've got to be honest.
It's a high score.
Yeah.
Off to a strong start.
If I'm being legitimate, I'd probably give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, it's more of a 3 for me.
Yeah, it's a decent start. I'm keen to see where it's going to go. It looks beautiful. Alex Maleev does a beautiful job with the art, but it's a Bendis comic. You know what you're getting into. There's going to be a lot of talking heads and a lot of dialogue and exposition going in as well, so be warned.
I mean, it's essentially Iron Man meets James Bond.
Yeah, there's definitely that vibe to it, absolutely. Also out this week was Superman American Alien number 5. I know we're all big fans of this after last week's episode. We were discussing its merits.
This is easily one of the best books DC is putting out right now.
It's not really a contest, is it? It's pretty much sweeping everything before it. Quite entertaining. I think the biggest strength for this book is if they feel like self-contained standalone stories. Even though they are tying in the same universe, each one's like within a 5-year, say a 10-year period potentially, you still don't feel like you're being left in the lurch or anything like that. If you read one after another, that's fantastic. But if you do just randomly pick up this Superman comic as a brand new reader or anything like that, you're getting a story. You're getting a Superman story. It's self-contained. You can enjoy it on any level you like.
And it's a really interesting approach to the costume this time. So he's got a black T-shirt. He's got an S spray-painted white on his chest. He's wearing goggles when he's flying.
Yeah.
And he's wearing Batman's cape that he stole at the end of last issue.
Which was excellent. I love that little touch. That was really, really well done. Having Francis Manapul on the art for this issue as well, oh, what a great move. What a great artist.
Yeah, visually, it's just breathtaking. The story is solid. And yeah, what a great book.
Absolutely. Francis Manapul, if you're not familiar with him, he was responsible for the relaunched New 52 version of The Flash. He was drawing that book, and I think was a big part of why that was such a huge success and such a popular choice for the for intro to DC Comics. A lot of people really just dove straight in with The Flash books because his art was so strong and so iconic looking. I'm very keen to see what he's going to do from here as well.
I'm not reading it. I've been saving it for the collection as it comes through. I'm kind of kicking myself now, especially given how strongly everyone's responded to it.
I've literally not heard a single bad review for this book, which is, you know, in comics, we're all quite judgmental and it's quite a divisive medium, let's be honest. But yeah, not one person has come to me and said, this is a terrible book, why did you recommend it to me, or anything like that.
I'm hoping DC take this on board a lot like what Marvel did with the Marvel Knights line, and maybe reaching outside of comics to get other people like Max Landis to do something very similar to this in the future.
Well, I think just embracing the fact that not everything has to be in current continuity as well. Elseworlds books have their merits, clearly. On that particular note, Batman 89, the rejected pitch, was the details were leaked for that this week, weren't they?
Oh, and visually beautiful, a continuation of the Tim Burton Batman universe.
What an excellent idea that would have been, and such a simple tie-in that you could have easily drawn people in with. If you got that hook straight away to the original Michael Keaton Batman, people love those films. Some people are not the biggest fans. Their opinion doesn't matter, in my opinion. If you don't love those films, then what are you doing being involved with comic books, to be honest?
We know what did happen, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. But these designs, the rejected concept pitch, is what could have been.
Yeah, exactly. It's what could have filled the gap between the first Batman film and Batman Returns.
And who was the creative team on the book?
That was Joe Quinones was involved, wasn't it? And
as the artist, yeah.
Yes, indeed. And I think it was Kate Leth who was going to be the writer on that one. Or straight away, Joe Quinones, look at the work he's doing for Marvel now with Howard the Duck. Look at the work he did over at DC with the Harley Quinn books he worked on. This guy's a proven track record. He's a known creator. He's a beloved creator. He's the kind of guy who people would have flocked to check out what he was doing, and let alone flocked to check out what he's doing. Oh, holy crap, he's working on a Batman 89 standalone series that I don't need to read 15 other DC titles to enjoy. Holy crap, I'm so on board with this.
In a world of Batman 66 comics, Wonder Woman 77, why can't we have Batman 89?
Seriously, it makes no sense. The fact that you can get away with and put together a Batman 66 meets the Man from U.N.C.L.E. crossover book, and you couldn't find room on the schedule for this book? Madness. Absolute madness.
Do you think the likeness could be an issue?
getting the actor likeness?
I don't think so, to be honest. Warner Brothers are a strong enough branch of distribution and a strong enough name and presence in the media world. I'm sure that if they put the word out, they own the rights to those films as well. They could have easily just put the foot down and said, look, this is spinning out of that same license. I'm sure if everyone was involved and everyone was okay with it, look, Michael Keaton's working on Beetlejuice 2, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and I also find, yes, I grew up and my first introduction to Batman was Batman 66, but it was quickly usurped by the Tim Burton Batmans as a kid, and that goes for an entire generation, maybe two generations of Batman fans. Yeah. And to leave those, you know, like you said, go from Batman 66, Wonder Woman 77, and then to skip that generation to what? For when you have such a solid team on the book as well.
Yeah, it's especially daft when we are in the midst of a massive wave of 90s nostalgia. Like, you could have easily marketed that book to a lot of young people who grew up with those films, like, really, really easily.
My hope is that there's a lot of activity online around this pitch. Hopefully, with enough people interested, enough people talking about it, somebody at DC could hopefully change their mind and just put it out as a digital first book, or only digital.
Or even if, like we were saying with the original graphic novel format that seems to have worked so well with the Earth One titles and things like that, if they just put it out as a standalone graphic novel, just to see how it works. Their branch of Vertigo, they worked on the Girl Who Played With Fire standalone graphic novel adaptations. Why not do the same approach with this? Just test the water, see how it goes. If this works really well, bring back some of the old Elseworlds titles, do them as standalone graphic novels.
They definitely have my money if they did that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be on board with that, absolutely.
Take my money.
You heard the man, get him.
Yeah. Which is not something I'm saying a lot to DC these days.
That seems to be the general consensus, really, doesn't it? Our final review for this week, we were going to go with the Extraordinary X-Men number 8, which is the beginning of the Apocalypse War tie-in. Luke, how did you feel about this one?
I thought it was okay. It was a lot of setup, which you're going to get in the first chapter. But I don't know, I expected to be grabbed more, and it didn't really have that effect on me.
As somebody who's read X-Men books since he was like 5 years old, that was what got me into comic books. I've got to be honest, the Extraordinary X-Men book as a general whole hasn't been very strong. It really hasn't grabbed me the way I was hoping. I'm not a huge fan of Humberto Ramos as an artist in general, but the book itself just hasn't been strong enough for me. So I dove back into it with this Apocalypse War beginning issue, thinking, okay, maybe I'll give it fresh eyes and a fresh start and see where it's going to take me. It felt very by the numbers, to be honest.
I mean, we don't want to go too spoiler heavy, but what do you reckon to Old Man Logan and Storm almost snogging?
Yeah, I mean, it's not unheard of. Their characters have a lot of history together in various forms, whether it was the animated series, whether it was in the comics, whether it was in various other Elseworlds titles and whatnot. But it did feel a little bit shoehorned in. It just felt like, yeah, we've got to have some sexual tension in the comic somewhere, so we'll put it in there. It didn't feel natural at all.
I understand character-wise, Storm is reeling from the death of her Logan, and they were pushing that relationship again, prime timeline in terms of the universe.
That was in the Wolverine the X-Men story arc, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And with him already affecting his not having healing factor and that sort of thing. So I can understand on her side, definitely having those feelings, and this is being an unresolved personal issue for her. But for Old Man Logan, I don't see it at all.
It's really, there's a massive disconnect between the main Old Man Logan title and this Extraordinary X-Men version of Logan. It just does not fit. The Old Man Logan that's being done by, it weirdly being done by Jeff Lemire as well, but with Andrea Sorrentino on the art duties, it feels dark, it feels grim, it feels gritty, it feels real world consequences. It feels like a book with massive consequences for the Marvel Universe. Whether it does or not is irrelevant. It feels that way when you're reading it. This doesn't. This feels like a jumbled kind of mess of an X-Men story arc, and it just feels like, well, this will be something we'll talk about in future years as like same level as Fatal Attractions or Extinction Agenda, where it happened, it didn't really have a huge effect, let's move on.
To its credit, it does read like an X-Men story.
Oh, definitely. It's got that 90s crossover feel to it, absolutely. But yeah, I'm just speaking as somebody who is a long-time X-Men fan, if you've read a lot of the big crossover events, you kind of know the tone of this, and you kind of know where it's going to go. New readers, I'm sure you'll be thrilled with some of the directions they've gone. There's a lot of characters in there who don't pop up in other books, like Forge, Colossus, Magic, some of the older X-Men, some of the newer X-Men characters from the Grant Morrison run and that kind of thing. They've all popped up as well, so there's definitely potential. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see how we go from there. Thanks for having us again, Luke.
Comic Zone, a place for all things comics, can be found at 81 Barrack Street, Perth. Now, next segment. You can say that again. This is our impressions round.
Yay.
And like I say each time, neither Jason nor myself are claiming to be good at doing impressions, but we're going to give it a shot anyway. And we'd like you, the listeners, to write in and let us know who does the best impression.
Better going to get another crap one.
You can do the honours, Jason. I'll let you go first. Just so you know what's going on behind the scenes, we have folded pieces of paper with both a character and a quote. Jason, who do you have?
Okay. I've got Carl Spackler, played by Bill Murray in Caddyshack.
Okay. Here we go.
I don't think I can remember his voice, though. So I'm just going to assume he sounds like Bill Murray.
Just try and do Bill Murray.
Yeah, okay. Cinderella story, out of nowhere, a former greenskeeper, now about to become a Masters champion. It looks like a miracle. It's in the hole. I think I went too Aussie butt with it.
Oh, yeah, probably.
I can't help that.
All right, I'm not going to tell you who it is. Let's see if we can do it in reverse. Are you ready?
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
And this is the second time I've done De Niro.
That's De Niro. He keeps going.
That didn't sound like De Niro, did it? Well, last time when I did Taxi Driver, I don't think that sounded like De Niro
either.
That
was more like a New York.
It was more gruff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was more gruff.
And this is.
But I feel as though I've peaked. I'm not going to try and do De Niro again. Personally, I think, yeah, Jason, you got that. But feel free to write in and let us know who did the best impression. Now it's time for our recommend. And once again, Jason, if you would like to go first.
Oh. All right. My recommend for this week is American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson. This is the first season of the American Crime Story true crime anthology series, basically in the same vein as American Horror Story. This season revolves around the infamous murder trial of O.J. Simpson, if it wasn't obvious by the title. It's based on a Jeffrey Toobin book. Horror Story producers that you may know of, Brad Falchuk and Ryan Murphy, are attached to this as well, and they obviously bring the charm and all that. You've got Cuba Gooding Jr. as OJ, John Travolta as Robert Shapiro, David Schwimmer, one of our good friends, he's playing Robert Kardashian, and yes, that Kardashian, and Horror Story veteran Sarah Paulson is Marsha Clark. Dude, it's a good drama. If that's what you're after, this is one right here. And the true aspect to it really adds to it. It gets you invested.
I'm also watching this show, and he's absolutely fantastic. It is brilliantly acted, but I've got to say, there's a moment that, well, moments that make me chuckle each time. It's whenever you see John Travolta pout. That's one of my favourite things about the show, other than it being a perfectly crafted drama. Yeah, whenever he pouts, it cracks me every time. But yeah, this is a solid drama.
Just John Travolta?
Yes.
Is that makeup or is that his face now?
No, I'm pretty sure it's makeup.
Is makeup?
I think they've tried to get some likeness to the real person.
Oh, okay, so he hasn't had work done?
I'm pretty confident it's makeup.
Okay.
But after this, like, Cuba Gooding Jr., he is showing us in this series how great of an actor he is. I'm just hoping he can claw his way at a direct-to-DVD action movies and get back on the big screen and give us a strong performance like he's giving us right now.
Yeah.
Solid, solid recommend.
Thanks.
My recommend, Cuckoo. And I know I've recommended this to you previously, Jason.
Cuckoo.
Cuckoo is a British sitcom set in Lichfield, Staffordshire, home to the Thompson family. When Ken, played by Greg Davis, and Lorna, played by Helen Baxendale, collect their daughter Rachel from the airport, she has returned with her now husband, Cuckoo, played by Andy Samberg. He is an eccentric American hippie with an all-loving attitude who does not have a job and loves to take drugs. So there's three series altogether. The third series is currently airing in the UK. The first series focused on Andy Samberg as Cuckoo, but then when the second series came around, Samberg left. It's like, well, how can you continue to call it Cuckoo without Sandberg? And I was asking myself, can the sitcom survive Taylor Lautner replacing Andy Sandberg? Yes, that Taylor Lautner for the Twilight franchise. My honest opinion, Lautner elevates this show. It is solid anyway.
Is he playing Cuckoo?
No, he's playing the son of Cuckoo.
Cuckoo Jr.
Now, Greg Davis, I mentioned at the beginning, you may know him as Mr. Gilbert from the Inbetweeners TV series.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his. He is solid in this sitcom. And it, you know, it's an interesting balance. So you've got a big, you know, whether it's Sandberg or Lautner, a big American personality, but it is, at its core, a British sitcom.
Okay, cool. Ah, that was an accident.
And Cuckoo is currently streaming on Netflix in Australia.
You love the
little
Netflix plug.
So if you're in Australia, give it a shot, and you have Netflix, why not? Now to close out on some trivia. Now, we mentioned Lobo previously could be the first proper R-rated theatrical DC character movie. Lobo, his name, roughly translates as he who devours your entrails and thoroughly enjoys it. Now, come on, with a name like that, you're screaming out for an R-rated movie.
That's rank.
So if you like what you're hearing, follow us on Facebook or Twitter. If you have any suggestions for segments or just want to give us a shout-out, leave a comment or send us a message. This and all of our other podcasts are available on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. We also have our website, www.thatfilmstewpodcast.weebly.com. Thanks for listening. I can get it together. I knew I was going to have trouble with that name. What did I say? Jason Fox. Oh god, gosh. Oh, there's no coming back. Okay. Jason Fox. Oh, I feel like Bradley Walsh on The Chaser.
Yeah.